This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Hello. Welcome to episode 13 of Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. My name is Nikhil. You may have heard my voice before as I was featured on my pal Peyton's podcast, episode 9, Alone. Peyton's actually joining me here today.
It's great to be back.
Today, we're going to be talking about the exchange between Creon and Haemon, both specifically the conversational aspect of it, which allows us readers in the separated time frame from when these plays actually took place to see how it reflects in our modern English. But we're going to also use a lens of politeness theory, which I'll explain later, to consider why did Creon and Haemon speak in specific ways while talking to each other to convey their points. So before we get right into the meat of this podcast, we decided we needed to talk about some terminology. So, Peyton, a lot of modern critics in literature use the term agon to describe this exchange between Creon and Haemon. I mean, more generally, just exchanges throughout Greek tragedy. And I was wondering if you could define for us, what is an agon?
Right. So an agon is basically a sort of verbal exchange between two characters that is framed as a competition. And it encourages the audience to form an opinion about the characters, sort of like a plaintiff and a defendant sort of go back and forth in court, and you have the jury, and the jury is supposed to form an opinion on the two characters in the court.
Yeah, and that's actually a great simile you drew there. I feel like it makes it a lot easier to understand what exactly is this opinion we as an audience are forming. And I was wondering, when you read this section for our class and for my teacher of the day, like, what was your takeaway from it?
Right. So my first reaction was that I was really impressed with how tactful Haemon was in his efforts to sort of nudge Creon in the right direction without just coming out right and saying, hey, you're wrong, and everyone thinks you're wrong, and you're an idiot for it. I think he does a really good job of instead bringing it gently to Creon and saying, hey, maybe there's something else going on here. You're not necessarily wrong, but there are a lot of people who have different opinions, and I think it would be helpful for you to consider them. And of course, Creon is very offended by this, and he resorts to attacks, and the conversation devolves. That was sort of my general impression.
And do you think that made Haemon's argument more convincing? Do you think it made you, as an audience member or a jury member, think he is in the right, so to speak?
It definitely made me feel like he was sort of trustworthy and thoughtful, and because of that, I felt like I could trust him. He seemed like he had really thought out what he wanted to say, and he didn't want to offend his father, even though that's how it came off. And I feel like that to me is respectful, and I like that. So Haemon came off to me as likable in this scenario.
Okay, yeah. So that's definitely, I think, the more common feeling that a lot of people get having read this section and just having experienced this play as a whole, maybe even seeing it in some performances done in the modern day. And now having discussed this, we can actually talk about that conversational aspect and that politeness theory lens I've mentioned to get a better understanding of this agon and why the exchange took place in a certain way. So let's start to actually look at the Greek a bit more closely. So from line 740 to 745, we see a very good example of this conversational aspect of the agon between Creon and Haemon. So I'm going to actually read some of the lines just so you could hear what the Greek sounds like. Hod hos eoike te gunaiki sumake, eper gune su, sugar un proke domai. O pankakiste dia dikes ion patri? Ugar dekaya se examaran tanta horo. Amartano gar tas emas arkas sebon? Ugar sebes timas ge tas theon paton. To summarize briefly this exchange between Creon and Haemon, Creon has started to point out that he believes Haemon to just be fighting on the side of Antigone, just fighting for her. And Haemon retorts with the fact that if Creon were a woman, he would also be fighting on his side, as he is trying to. For he, like, wants to work with him. He wants to be on his side and support him. And Creon just calls him, like, oh, wretched one, asking if he's going through these, like, just things against his father. Like, is he really arguing against him? And Haemon, like, retorts saying that, like, oh, I don't see you, like, doing any just things. Like, I see you doing unjust things, for that matter. And Creon seems a bit quizzical and is like, am I doing unjust things, like, while honoring my own deeds, like, my own commands that I've made? And Haemon says that he can't be doing any honor, doing any good, because he's trampling upon the, like, honors of the gods, like, their will. So let's now go back and kind of look at the Greek and see what it's doing for this conversational aspect. So a lot of times in arguments, you can hear more in these bitter arguments between people, you start to lose a lot of formulaic and very structured word usage, and you just kind of start to, like, take what people are saying. For example, Creon ends his first line with Tegu Naiki Sumake, he fights for the woman or with the woman, and Haemon responds, Aper Gune Su. He actually takes, like, the same word and just flips it and changes it around. And he said, if you were a woman, then, i.e., he would be fighting for you. And that's kind of a niche way that you can see how Greek doesn't really need to repeat stuff, just like we don't in English, to convey the same amount of meaning. Same thing you see occur when Creon says, oh, like, wretched one. He says, like, oh, pankakiste dia dikes ion patri. And then Haemon responds, ugar dikaya. He takes those words that Creon just used and just turns them on themselves to argue against Creon. And Peyton, do you see any, like, neat aspects about that?
Yeah, it sort of came off to me like some sort of verbal judo, like just taking the exact same thing the person said and sort of using their own energy against them in the way that you do in judo.
Yeah, and do you think, like, that's kind of frustrating? Like, I feel like when that happens with me, when people just keep reusing my points, I will get frustrated and feel like they're not really saying much of their own and they're just kind of twisting my words.
Yeah, it definitely can be frustrating to argue with someone like this. It seems it's almost like, I don't know, it's like the other person's too slippery and you can't really hit them with an argument without them throwing it back in your face. And it's understandable for, you know, Creon to become angry and flustered at this point.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, like, specifically that's why when in line 768, Creon uses these third person imperatives like drato, froneto, like these very, they have this kind of dismissive, like, sense to them. And do you think that is a result of this prior argument, like specifically how Haemon's been talking to him?
I think it definitely is. It's sort of Creon marking the end and saying, all right, that's it. I'm done talking directly to you. I'm just going to address you as something else far off in the distance now that I'm done with. And I will not even acknowledge that I just had an entire conversation directly with you. I'm so flustered. I don't want to deal with you anymore.
Yeah, and I think exactly what you just said is pretty reflective of, like, how we speak in English and just, like, how people get now. I mean, emotion's always kind of going to be a consistent thing throughout time, but specifically, like, the formulations of how you decided to express his emotions, I think, were a really nice way of analyzing in English, like, how Creon would talk just as probably we would talk in our own type of argument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now having discussed the emotions of Creon in the conversational aspect of the Agon, we can actually look at it through a psychological lens. There is a theory called politeness theory, which is a very good way to think about these conversations and interactions between people in any setting. So there are two faces in politeness theory, positive and negative face. Positive face of someone entails that they want to be approved of or admired. So naturally, this is threatened by criticism or abuse of any sort, while negative face does not want to be impeded upon or imposed upon. So naturally, requests or, again, criticisms, which is kind of similar to positive face, is something they don't want to experience. So Creon, throughout this conversation, is actually being attacked in both faces, not necessarily by Haimon's words, but just Haimon's existence to have chosen to do this. Haimon specifically comes in and is telling Creon, like, his decision isn't right. Not maybe explicitly, but that is the essence of what his purpose is, right? Is to tell Creon that, okay, I don't think what you're doing is right. And that's a criticism, which affects the positive face. And the negative face is also affected both by being imposed upon with this, like, request to change his action, but also just impeded. Because Creon now, after having made a firm decision that he's going to have Antigone killed for what she has done, he's now being requested by his own son to maybe stray away from that path and no longer go on it, which is now attacking his other face. And we can see how that really does explain why is Creon getting so flustered and emotional, and just what Haimon maybe didn't foresee when he came to him.
Right. And the sort of strategy that Haimon uses when he's arguing with Creon here is called by some off-record. And what that basically means is whenever he provides a point, there's always something along with that point that gives Haimon an out, right? So he says, like, oh, if I weren't your son, I would call you an idiot. Now, he's not exactly directly calling him an idiot, but he's saying, if I weren't, and by saying that, he gives himself an out, and he's not going directly at him. And his goal in this is to make sure that he's not offending Creon outright. And while this is his goal, it doesn't exactly turn out the way he wants, and he didn't foresee that when he was employing this sort of argument tactic.
Yeah, and that definitely is a big thing to consider in this Agon as a whole, is that the whole time we're presented with this idea of Haimon being a, like, voice of reason, who's coming in with these pleas, but coming in with these pleas for the sake of Creon. That's at least how they're being presented, and that's the way most people will take it. And the way he phrases things and frames things, although to us seem reasonable, once you hear them and really consider how they must have sounded and how Creon's state of mind must be, given all his face has been, how he's, like, losing face, you can understand that these attempts, while they may be good in certain situations, don't work well with someone who already is emotionally a mess, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I could definitely see how someone could take these sort of off-base arguments as disrespectful. Like, and I already talked about how Haimon came off to me as respectful. But I could also see how someone would take, you know, a phrase like, if I weren't your son, I would call you an idiot, and then be offended by that and say, well, just come out and say it directly to me. Like, don't beat around the bush. Just tell me what you think. Tell me how it is. And I think that was what Creon, I think, maybe would have preferred.
Yeah, I think that's a really solid analysis, and I think really captures this psychological aspect of this exchange between the two that I don't think is always considered when analyzing Greek literature. Having discussed these two aspects of the Agon, which I had covered in my Teacher of the Day, I figured I could kind of talk about how my Teacher of the Day went. I think one of the most interesting things I picked up while preparing for this Teacher of the Day experience was definitely the conversational aspect of the Agon. Because we see ancient languages and we think of them to be so separated from us and just so different. But when you look closely, I think you start to notice these subtleties that make it just sound like another language, and shows like the echoes that we see in English now of, for example, the arguments that we were discussing earlier, where like people tend to take words and flip them and use them against you in more like heated arguments. Which I find to be probably the most interesting and, like, out there thing that I did not expect to see at all. One of the most surprising things, though, I think, was just how knowledgeable all the students were, and especially the new insights that they brought, because from time to time, it can be kind of worrisome that people will just repeat your points to you or maybe like slightly add on. But when a student can bring in some just completely different ideas that you just hadn't even considered, it's probably one of the most enjoyable things, as you get to hear it and further expand your own horizon from the amount of research you did. And I think that's always a really cool thing to see. And honestly, the one thing that I really liked about this and definitely will remember is just getting to teach. I think teaching is always a very fun experience and something I like doing a lot. So that was a greatly appreciated opportunity. Finally, thanks for listening to this episode of Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. My name is Nikhil, and I was joined today by the jovial Peyton Wilhite.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, and if you would like to leave any comments, please do, and I'll be more than sure to read them. All right, thanks.